Well, it is 11 o'clock, and with this phone call, also the sun is starting to beginning to shine. Gentlemen, thank you for joining us. Market update, Manny Frangidakis, Stamatis Sastra, and I've got the Professor Petro with us. So, gentlemen, kalimera.
Kalimera.
Kalimera. Kalimera, kalimera.
Kalimera.
It's a little different time zone.
There you go. There you go. How are you, gentlemen?
Good.
Doing well.
Money, things are looking higher. You know, a good opening in November. It looks like the market wants to finish the year strong. A lot of talk that, you know, we're not going to have a recession and we're not going to have 5 and 6% treasury bills, you know. People looking at cheap stocks and say, why not?
Yeah, look, so when we concluded October, and after the smizing that took place between August and October, we said that the market was setting up for a fourth quarter rally. We didn't know to what extent, but we did say about 5 to 6% was expected on our end, and you got it in 1 week. So the S&P was up nearly 6% just last week alone in five trading days. We do think that that is now kind of muted. There has been a slight overreaction, you know, a little too far, too fast. We do expect some consolidation, which you saw, you know, taking place yesterday afternoon and so far this morning. There's also some left tail risk that's getting built up with geopolitical tensions, but nothing that the market seems to be sniffing out at the moment. But right now, at this threshold, I think this is kind of where you can expect the market to end for the year. Could be slightly higher, could be slightly lower, but I think that fourth quarter bounce we expected is here. There is a seasonality play. You know, markets tend to look for Santa Claus to come to town, but we're not 100% sure we'll get it this year, as we do think retail sales will continue to stall out in the economy, just given inflationary pressures and where the next dollar for consumers is going. But yeah, that was your good news, is that you had a, you know, pretty robust rally last week, and things seem to be slightly better. But I do think that, you know, to say recession's off the table, I don't necessarily agree, because what you're seeing take place in the copper market right now, which is down 1.4% just today following the numbers out of China and Germany. And you look at oil as well, which is now below where it was pre-October 7th. Those are recessionary signals. The only one that's not confirming it right now is the stock market, but the stock market is usually the last one to know that the recession is here.
I saw gas yesterday for $2.91. It's the cheapest I've seen in 2 years.
Yeah. Oil and gas are going down, including, you know, potentially some of the stocks too. So this might be as good as it gets for the energy markets for a little bit, because oil corrects massively when recession starts to enter its way into consumers' minds.
Petro?
So, the numbers out of China were brutal. I mean, this morning you reported, Chinese exports falling 6.4% year over year in October. So there's definitely recessionary pressures, not just here, but globally.
To what extent is the geopolitical stuff that you referenced earlier, Manny, affecting this recession? I mean, people are just waiting and seeing what's going on and holding their pocketbooks?
Yeah, Professor, there hasn't been a massive move due to what's taking place in Gaza and Israel, and even still with Ukraine. You're starting to see, I mean, the grains have gone down a little bit in terms of prices, but I don't think that's a reaction based off of geopolitics. I think that's a reaction based off of recessionary signals.
Yeah.
But the market at this point in time doesn't really have an opinion one way or the other. They're waiting to see what transpires from this. Do things become more aggressive? Do borders get crossed? That's when the market will truly sniff things out and start to care. But, you know, you even have gold dropping this morning, so it's a muted reaction. It's not really getting priced in one way or the other.
Yeah, I wonder, like, you know, you mentioned China as well. I mean, there's a lot of, like, you know, just a lot of murmurs and whispers out there about China, maybe a conflict coming, maybe Taiwan being, like, the third thing that drops, you know, after Ukraine and Israel, Taiwan, China, and all those Chinese talk. How much of that is, like, creating some kind of a nervousness, since China is such a big piece of the global economic puzzle?
Look, I think the China-Taiwan debate will always kind of be floating out there, but it doesn't seem like they're making any moves at the same time. I think their economy is in shell shock right now. They're going through some pretty troublesome times, so I don't actually expect China to make a move this year or anytime soon on Taiwan. It could be in this decade. I think they're getting ready for it. But they're still, they're more focused right now on creating, not really allegiances, because China doesn't have any allegiances. They're only, their only ally truly is North Korea. They don't have anything else set up with anyone else. Even Russia, this whole thing with the BRICS, it's not really coming up to much. But I think what they're doing is, they're continuing to focus on areas like Africa, things that tie into Huawei and some of these other Chinese national companies that are out there, and continuing to provide economic opportunities to emerging and frontier markets to continue to shore up their trading partners, meaning that they're going to continue to look to do more business in renminbi and yuan than in U.S. dollars. So they're in that mode at the moment, continuing with the One Belt Initiative. I don't see them really making a move on Taiwan anytime soon at this point in time. Things could change. Yeah. But the market's not sniffing that out either.
Yeah, well, that was the key. Like, I agree with you. Like, things could change and something might happen. But I was just, more focusing on that last statement that you made, as far as like the, if you detect any nervousness in the market because of this political discussion and revving up the statements that come out from this general, that politician, that say, it's an inevitability. So, what's the economic side of something like that, so that's the
economic side of it is where does it leave us in terms of deficits, right? So we know we're going to empty the piggy bank right now as we continue to support Ukraine and as we send more support to Israel. The question is at what point does the U.S. get pulled into a potential third conflict? And that's where where the rubber will probably meet the road, because given where our deficits are, we know that they're problematic. The bond market's telling you that it is going to be a governor to growth for us in the future. So it's at that point at what point does fiscal spending become too much that you have a revolt in the bond market, which then gets fed into the stock market?
Yeah, and it has a political effect too. I mean, we saw the flip in Congress, right? Like you said, we have like this very austere, Republicans now setting the agenda as far as spending is concerned. If nothing else, Mike Johnson now is setting the agenda of what's going to be spent and what your feasibility is in spending. So,
off subject just a little bit. I've been hearing something this last just 24 hours on the news about college debt relief, that some kind of bringing that back to. Have you guys heard anything about that in the last 24 to 48 hours?
Not anything substantial. Obviously, Biden has tried to do things in the past, but look, you're going into a presidential election. And he ended up, why did he win? Is he really was able to go after the liberal hearts of, the millennial Gen Z demographic. So how do you continue to play to that base? Well, they're the ones that are holding all the student loans. So I do think there's some political manipulation there, some headlines getting crossing terminals and getting put out in publications that are there to try to grab the eyes of potential voters.
Yeah, don't forget what David said earlier today. He's facing a big issue there with the younger voters when it comes to Gaza and what's going on in Palestine right now. So I think that's a balancer right there. This student debt is a big, big issue.
Correct. Yeah, so look, there's obviously political lines being drawn between, one side or the other as it relates to the tensions in the Middle East. But I think that he's trying to play to both sides by, being like, hey, let's not look at this, but here, I'm going to give you $9 billion in student loan relief.
Always sweetens the pot. I mean, he's facing a difficult line he has to walk, because on one side he has the so-called left and what's going on geopolitically, and on the other side he has the more hardened right, which is asking him to be more fiscally conservative and accountable, and that's going to be very, very difficult to do both at the same time.
One closing question. What was the name of the company? They filed for bankruptcy yesterday. They were the ones that leased.
WeWork.
What we hear about that? And were they publicly traded, Manny?
Yes.
They were?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Delisted.
So what happens under that situation? See you later. Your stock is gone. I mean, when they're gone, they're gone. That's it, right?
Yeah. You squandered billions. $20 billion was what the, you know, the original, I think, IPO was. Yeah, I mean, it was just a bad model. Didn't work in that environment. You know, it was one of those times that Wall Street gets really exuberant when you have cost of capital at zero and no inflation and the party continues on and you're getting great returns from all these startups and tech and IPOs, and it kind of fell into that. But it was a bad, bad business, a bad model. You know, we never had an allocation there. It never made any sense. It was kind of one of those stocks that was set up for a dirt nap.
And it took it, the eternal dirt nap, I think, I
mean,
on that one.
Yep. I mean, you know, nothing but the U.S. left $80 billion in Afghanistan and equipment when it left, so $20 billion.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Put some perspective into lots of things.
Yeah, but that's, you know, one's taxpayer money, one's investor money, it's different.
Yeah. I guess that's actually, you know, that's very true, and we just, like, we don't necessarily care about our taxpayer money.
Yeah, just to give you a perspective, the stock opened, when it went public, it opened at more than $100. And right now it's zero.
Yeah.
What was it at its, what was this, Stamati, do you have any, what was it at its height?
The highest was 100, it was $370.
Wow. And now it's zero.
It's just a lesson. I mean, most people tried to, a lot of smart people tried to short that stock, but this is just a lesson that markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay liquid.
Yeah.
You know, so if you started shorting that at $100 a share, knowing that the thing was a piece of junk, and that the model was never going to work, you know, you were taken to the woodshed before you were actually, you were eventually right.
Keep your eyes, you know, Dio Matia Brostake, Dio Matia Popiso, I guess, as the Greeks say. Any closing comments? No. Good session today.
Tessera Brosta. Tessera Brosta. Looking at you, Mayor.
Hasta Popiso.
Ita Matia su dekatessera.
Exactly.
All right, closing comments. Professor Petro Vavaka still thinks the Pats are going to win the remaining games in the schedule. I told you at the beginning of the year, four games was a stretch. But nonetheless, how about a real quick recap of yesterday's Sunday's game? And I'm not going to blame this one on Jones because I saw some passes that were just dropped.
Yeah.
Period. Dropped the pass.
I mean, you guys know better. I mean, Manny has played, so, you know, what am I going to say? Yeah. I'm just a fan.
You know, just a fan. I say catch the ball. That's what I say.
Pats all the way.
Anyway.
They're a dumpster fire and a half. So
it happens.
There's just too many things. I mean, there's just too many. You know, the biggest issue that I had as it relates to Sunday's game was you knew what the offense was going to be coming into it. We haven't invested any money there. We had no coaching up until we brought Bill O'Brien back, so the entire scheme was ripped up. Third offensive coordinator for Mac Jones, so you knew what you were going to get out of the offense. What's surprising is how the special teams played, because what we know to be true about Bill Belichick is he really only cares about the special teams and the defense. That's where he spends money. That's where he brings in talent. That's where he spends the majority of his coaching. So for the defense to be as bad as they were, and for the special teams to make as many mistakes as they did during that game that cost them that game, that is just, you know, unbelievable in my mind. So I agree it's probably not on Mac Jones, but everything needs to be addressed here at this team. It's going to be interesting to see what the cracks do at the end of the day. Yeah. There's rumors that he could potentially be on a different flight home from Germany after this weekend. I don't see them making a mid-season move.
McDaniels is available.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was the heir apparent, too.
We'll see.
Well, apparently now I think Gerard Mayo, quote unquote, is the heir apparent. But now they're floating the idea that potentially Vrabel leaves Tennessee. But then that means you have to fire everybody. That means you're getting rid of Bill Belichick and you're getting rid of every single person on that staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if you're going to rip the tape, then you got to rip it and start fresh. You can't have people that were legacy Belichick people still there. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. If I had to bet on this, I would say he's probably back next year. Whether that's the right thing or not, that's up for debate.
Yeah, but everything you described, man, it's an issue of coaching. You know, like you can't just have all these parts not clicking together.
It's not even just coaching; it's personnel too. I mean,
yeah, like, he's been doing the shopping, right?
If you had people in place, I mean, when you look at the roster, the only player that you have as a young talent that you could say could be something really special in this league is Christian Gonzalez. Other than that, everybody else is a piece play that has been snail-mailed into the organization to kind of fix a part.
Yeah.
So there's too many things to address. The offensive line's in shambles. Your issues at quarterback play, do you stick with Mac Jones or do you move on? You have no wide receivers.
Haven't had wide receivers in a long time.
Yeah.
Bring back Randy Moss.
Our defensive backs have forgot how to tackle, like Adrian Wilson. Like, too many missed tackles. So, like, there's too many pieces on this team now that need to be addressed.
Yeah.
So you're probably looking at a rebuilding mode for the next 4 to 5 years. I don't think this team's going to be cutting
it. I say bring it on. That's what I say. I say let's just bring it on and get over with the misery. Anyway, gentlemen, 12 points, wealth management. Man, a great session today. Petro, thank you. Stamati, thank you. And, of course, 12 points, wealth management. Manny Frangidakis, 617-212-8343. He welcomes any phone calls, any conversations. He'll keep you abreast of what's going on. So secure your hard work. 617-212-8343. Manny's available anytime for a phone call. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much. And we'll regroup next Tuesday at this time right here on Grecian Echoes. And ladies and gentlemen, we did record this, so if you enjoyed the session, tell your friends. We'll put this on our social media sites and our WNTN websites very shortly. So 12 Points Wealth Management, Tuesdays, right here at 11 o'clock on Grecian Echoes. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.